Welcome to another In Wheel Time podcast, a 30-minute mini version of the In Wheel Time car show that airs live every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. Central. AutoShield.com. This is your favorite go-to spot in podcasting and live streaming. Woo-hoo. It's the In Wheel Time Car Talk Show. Special feature on racetracks coming up, along with Richard Tomlin from Apex Auto Works, SCCA, and the racer himself.
You bet.
Mr. Mars has This Week in Auto History, and we'll get you caught up on stories making automotive news headlines. Today's program is sponsored by Mecham Auctions Houston, April 4th through the 6th at NRG Center. Howdy, along with Mike Out of This World Mars, we always need more Jeff Zekin. Our chief engineer, David Ainsley, is taking a break today.
All right, good for
I'm
David.
I'm Don Armstrong, glad that you could make it along with us on this Saturday live version of our show. By the way, if you're listening in a podcast, our live version airs, generally speaking, every Saturday, 8 to 11. Last weekend, we postponed it by an hour so we could grab hold of the entire peoples that were coming in to the Corvette Chevy Expo down in Galveston.
And we walked the show after the program.
Yeah, we stumbled the show afterwards because we had a little cocktail.
Well, we did, but we ran into some very interesting hot rodders and builders and owners and families and husband and wife teams and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it was good.
It was.
Yeah, enjoyed it. So I ran across a story that I wanted to read. It's a little lengthy, but I think that you'll appreciate it. This is off of Haggerty.com/media, written by Aaron Robinson. And the title of the story is "When We Lose a Racetrack, Everyone Loses." It starts off with Los Angeles is a town with a well-earned reputation for a short attention span. You're only as good as your last 90 minutes, goes the old saying in the movie business. And the hook is always waiting to yank off stage anything or anyone who isn't killing it. That rule applies to racetracks, too. The Los Angeles Motor Dome, a board track erected in 1910, lasted just 3 years. And Beverly Hills Speedway, which opened in 1920, only 4 years until the real estate developers got it. Riverside Raceway, that we all remember, managed an unforgettable 32-year run before it was plowed under to make way for a shopping mall. Perhaps the ghost of Ken Miles still haunts the place. After years of decline, the mall boasts hundreds of thousands of vacant square feet today. Given the long odds, Auto Club Speedway, a.k.a. California Speedway, did pretty well 26 years from the day the two-mile D-shaped banked oval opened to host 240-mile-an-hour IndyCar laps to the day the wrecking ball arrived. Drone video surfaced in November of chomping excavators tearing away grandstands. Kind of reminds you of the racetrack here in Texas.
Yep.
Not too far from here. Drone video surfaced, as I mentioned, chomping excavators. In posterity, it joins the Indianapolis of the West, the short-lived Ontario Speedway, 10 years, ending in 1980, which was just up the freeway. Its land now hosts a CarMax, a Benihana, and an El Torito, among its other pearls of suburban banality. Auto Club's demise leaves a metro area of nearly 13 million people with only one circular track within its environs. Irwindale Speedway, a strictly amateur venue, which somehow has dodged decade-old plans to convert it into a mall, likely because the mall business, thanks to Amazon, etc., is in worse shape than the racing business, vows by NASCAR to eventually replace Auto Club with a half-mile oval on what remains of acreage that has mostly been sold off to a developer intent on building logistics warehouses for Amazon, etc., have no firm timetable. Kind of like our Baytown drag strip.
Yeah.
It's a sad fact that in places, racing struggles to pay the bills for the increasingly expensive land that it occupies, and the forces of redevelopment never sleep. To the north, Monterey County, the deed holder of Laguna Seca, was in December sued by locals aiming to curtail or eliminate the famed track. You can shout until you're blue in the face that the circuit, opened in 1957, predates all the surrounding McMansions. But those people don't care who is first. They really don't. They have money and lawyers, and they are game to try their luck in court. It's a challenge that racetracks share with local municipal airports. The airport where this writer, kept his Cessna as a former U.S. Army Air Corps training base in 1939 is when it was built. Now under attack from a small but vocal clique of residents who wish it gone, they've already tasted blood in nearby Santa Monica, where an airfield opened in 1923 and supplied thousands of Douglas aircraft during World War II is set to close in 2028 so the developers can dine on its bones. Once upon a lifetime, a bolder America accepted and even celebrated these facilities as proof that the world's greatest economy produced vital and thrilling pursuits that enriched our lives and supplied a creative outlet to our energy and industry. Now a more flaccid nation that prefers to sit at home streaming and shopping foreign-made junk online sees nothing in these venues but noise, pollution, and risk. They are unwittingly being stoked by gimlet-eyed developers who are salivating over the land and willing to fund legal teams and sympathetic council candidates. Replacing a track or an airport with warehouses or 20 to 30 high-density housing units per acre will line the pockets of developers, but it won't do much for noise and pollution in the community. Everyone is bound to be disappointed, except the developers, of course. Yeah. But the relentless demand for more housing drives cities to flatten anything in their path that appeals only to a minority. And like it or not, we are a minority. Unless we fight, unless we write letters and go to council meetings and support candidates who believe there should be recreational room for everyone, we'll end up like the misfits in medieval times, hounded out the city gates and banished to the countryside so that we can continue enjoying activities that were once popular in an earlier, more energetic age, at least until the city inevitably sprawls in our direction. Thought that was a pretty good article. Yeah. The article, again, When We Lose a Racetrack, Everyone Loses, by Aaron Robinson at Hagerty.com.
And it seems that we're losing more and more.
Yeah.
They're becoming more frequent losses.
Well, we've had conversations with Rodney Rodriguez about it. And, you know, as far as circle tracks are concerned, very few. The 3/8 mile Houston Motorsports Park is one that's somehow clinging on. That's an asphalt facility. There's the other one. The 105 Speedway is a dirt facility. But it's basically for the racers and not for the public, although it's open to the public and tickets are cheap and it's fun to go on a Saturday night. That's where I grew up, at Myers Speedway here in Houston, long gone now.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. did a segment where he actually bought an old track, I think, in near Hickory, North Carolina. And there was a segment, through one of the NASCAR channels that they go and look at these features. I mean, there's grass growing up in the cracks of the track and everything, and the old hot dog stand is there, and signs are dilapidated, but it is. It's a concern.
Well, I mean, for those of us that are automotive people, I mean, what a great Saturday night. Go and take your hot rod to the racetrack, show it, have a section there. I know that Gina Shaw Knowles did it when she was running the races on Saturday night at Houston Motorsports Park.
Yep.
It's fun for everybody. Everybody likes to go to the races. It's fun to, you know, have a cheering section for your particular driver.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to meet some of those drivers when I was doing the interviews out there. Really great kids, and kids, so fun. I met how old was he? 13 years old, and he won the particular race. Didn't have a driver's license yet, but he was out there.
But he was qualified to run, and that's just it, too. The young kids can get their new mentors and get their autographs and get the people that they want to look up to in the future and maybe guide them into that, be it a race like that or a NHRA-type event.
Yeah. Well, you know, Richard Tomlin is our local guy with SCCA. He's on the line with us now, Apex Auto Works. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Great article. A lot of truth in that.
Yeah.
A lot of truth.
There truly is. And, you know, I think that even if you're not into auto racing, I think that you owe it to your son or daughter to take them by the hand and take them to a racetrack and let them see it for the real deal.
Yeah.
And go out there and meet some of the drivers. Get a date with Richard and have him show you the pits and the cars and the drivers and the sport itself.
Well, it's the noise and the atmosphere and the smells of, you know, the fuel and the rubber burning
and the hot dogs.
And the hot dogs. Got to go hot dogs.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It also is the evolution of where we're at, right? Like, this is what's led us to where we are now in cars and technology. You were just talking about the Toyota, the Hyundai N. I mean, all these cars came from a racing background.
Yep.
This is where they were developed. This is where we cut our teeth.
It's so funny when I guess it was was it Formula One that was at Circuit of the Americas here recently? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stands were filled with all of these people that have no clue about racing. They didn't know what they were looking at, but they were there for all the glitz and the glamour and their suites and all of that sort of stuff. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. I appreciate all of that. But I also like to get down in the pits. I like to sit in the stands. I like to wave my checkered flag that I've got with me that I bought at the souvenir stand. Yep. And see who wins the race.
Or you've got that jersey that you just had that driver autograph.
Yeah.
You know, and you're wearing that. You're strutting around.
Yeah.
You bet.
It's a fun day. I know that we had IndyCar here, whether it was either in the streets of downtown Houston or the built-up circuit that they had out there by the Dome and NRG mm-hmm. Stadium, that was a fun time, and I really enjoyed it, and I took my daughters there.
Yep.
I've drug them to every race that I could imagine, so they have an appreciation for it, and I'm sure that you grew up the same way, Richard. I mean, you know, somebody that you knew was into auto racing and took you by the hand and said, here, come look at this.
I can remember 7, 8 years old checking tire pressures in the staging lanes. I mean, that's just it's how it was. You were part of the team. That's what you did.
Yep.
Showed up, did your work.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts. That's where you learn.
Yeah.
And I've had the pleasure of teaching a young man the last week about tire pressures. Like, how'd you learn all this? It's like it's just years of doing the same thing over and over and over.
Learn from somebody else, just like you're trying to teach him.
Yeah.
Yep. Got to pass it on. Nobody else is going to, it seems.
So what's going on down there at Apex Auto Works, my friend?
For me, it's a lot of Mecum prep.
Whoa, finished a big crash.
Mecum prep, right?
Oh, prep. I thought you said the other word.
Yeah.
No, Mecum. The gold Cutlass will be at Mecum on Thursday. It's a 63 Cutlass F85.
Oh, my.
So 215? A little bitty aluminum.
It's a 215 aluminum engine.
There you go. Yeah, the aluminum block weighs 60 pounds, aluminum block, aluminum head, four lug Chevrolet.
Oh, I burned one of them up.
Did you?
Yeah, when I was 16, I went through one of them like crazy.
Yeah, it's a super, super clean car. I want to say it's got 60,000 miles on it. Been stored in the guy's garage for a while, so now we're just getting it all put back together, and it's going to go away. He's decided he's not going to do anything with it, so... we'll have that one there Thursday, and then we've got a 64 Nova we're working on, waiting on some wheels and a little bit of paint correction on that, and it will be at the auction on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And this weekend, of course, for us is just a ton of racing. We Lemons going on in NOLA right now, so New Orleans has got a 24-hour Lemons race.
Are you going
9-hour
down
race
there?
Today, 8-hour tomorrow. Do what?
This weekend. Okay.
He would have been there already, yeah.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, this weekend, no, We've got about 30 cars, I would say, that are there that we know or have built here. And then you've got SCCA going on this weekend up at Eagles Canyon in Denton. And to top that off with NASCAR running at COTA.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Texas Mile going right now. So we had four places to be this weekend and decided, you know what, we're not going to any of them. We're going to stay here and man the phones.
Because somebody will be unhappy.
Too much driving to get to all of them.
Yeah, because it's a long way up to Eagle Canyon.
Or NOLA.
Yeah, it's a drive there. New Orleans, there's just no good way to get there, as we all know. COTA and Texas Mile, pretty simple and close together, but it was going to be a three-day trip, and I decided we weren't doing it. So got all the cars done, sent them off on their way. Drivers are happy. Teams are happy. At this moment, everybody is still running. So we're in a good spot.
Good.
Richard, let me ask you, going back to the article we were talking about with the racetracks, most of your racing, where you take your cars, they're more like road races, aren't they?
Correct. A lot of road racing.
Do you see
that? We still go and attend the oval track, but most of ours is road racing, which goes through the same stuff. That's what Texas World Speedway went through, was a growing, you know, Bryan College Station area.
Yep.
There was just no land left, and the land was worth more than what the racetrack was generating.
What, that was a, what was that, a mile and a half track?
No, that's 2.9 on the actual road course.
No, not the road course. I'm talking about the oval.
Yeah, I don't know the oval specs.
It was 1.5.
The only
I never ran the oval spec. I would know.
Yeah.
Wikipedia.
Well, the only problem for a spectator at road courses, generally speaking, and particularly out there at Bryan College Station, was that the road course went out of the infield and into an area that you couldn't even begin to see over on the back stretch over there. Right. And that's where all the action was.
Great
they had bad wrecks over there and stuff, but you couldn't see it.
Yeah. Great for the drivers, bad for the spectators. And that's a thing that road racing has often faced is, you know, being able to actually watch it. But the technology of cameras, the GPS telemetry, the tracking of the cars, as you're seeing in F1 and IMSA, Le Mans, all have it now. It's come a long ways. Even at Pikes Peak this year, we'll have telemetry of all the cars as they're going up the mountain that will be shown to spectators. So you'll be able to keep up real time with what's going on, what people's corner speeds are, what their top speeds are, what section of the course that they're in. And this technology, to me, has the opportunity to bring back life to what we're seeing. We're so overloaded with information, we go to watch a race, and people just want more. It sucks that they'll be sitting there looking at their phone, but it gives them the opportunity to keep them involved in this sport that we love so much.
Yeah, at least they're looking, even if it's at their phone.
Yep. They'll be there at the sites doing fun things. I want to say that COTA event for F1 you were talking about, it was October of last year. 455,000 fans is what showed up. And a lot of people attribute that to the Netflix show Drive to Survive, which I think is season 6, season 7 now. But F1 is seeing 100% growth year over year with viewership. Like you were saying, a lot of people who didn't know what it was until the fanfare showed up with a couple cameras to record some of the stuff that goes on. And now people are getting involved again. So it's a trickle-down theory for us in road race. If F1 is growing, then the motorsports section of road racing will grow. Give it a little time.
Well, I have to tell you that I passively am a fan of Formula One. I'm more of a fan of IndyCar. And I know that I have been to Indianapolis a couple of times, and that is a week-long event in Indianapolis. And I would encourage anybody, if you've never been, even if you like, you know, IndyCar or not, that is an event of a lifetime to go to the Indy 500 and all of the events that lead up to it.
Yeah, there's a reason it's been around 100 years, right? I mean, it's just like Pikes Peak, same thing. The races that have been around the longest, they know how to put on a show. They get everybody involved. Everybody gets up close, gets to touch and feel things, and you're a part of it. When you're involved, you enjoy it. When you're sitting back just spectating, it's not the same.
What's going on in your shop out there? Besides getting ready for Mecum, you say that you've already got all those cars finished. I mean, do you have any big, long hot rod projects you're working on?
We've got a three-wheel Cushman going back to the Satterfield.
Wait a minute. Hold it right there, man. Buster. When you said Cushman, I'm in.
So he found a very, very distraught Cushman. We basically sadly pulled the motor transmission out of it. It was all locked up. But put all that stuff out of it. We've made it into a prop that will be going to the Stella Hotel in Bryan at the Legends Golf Course there. So Stella Hotel will be parked in the front there and be a floral display. Got some LED lights underneath the glow, but complete redo.
Wait a minute. You're turning the Cushman into a floral display.
A flower pot.
That is the perfect end for a Cushman. Only thing that would be any better than that would take the Cushman out to the cemetery and put plants in it.
What kind of plants are you putting in there? Pansies?
Well, exactly. 21 years of service for the U.S. mail, postal mail. And the guy that actually drove it those years was one who actually bought it back. And he'd had it until Satterfield got it. So really cool story behind it. But what a piece of metal.
You got to tub it out.
A piece of metal.
Plant some pansies.
I haven't heard that, but that's a good one. I like it.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. So
and then we're thrashing for Wawa coming up too, so that's early April.
What's
and
Wawa?
Right after what, Wawa.
Wait a minute. What's Wawa?
Yep. Chihuahua is our open road race
Chihuahua.
In Chihuahua, Mexico.
Chihuahua.
That'll be the 1,300 miles over 3 days, taking the Black C5, a lot like yours, down there to go play this year. So it should be a good time.
So is that a road course? Are you on the highway?
That is actually like the old La Carrera race. They actually closed down public roads, and we raced down the public roads. And as soon as we raced through, they're closed about 30 to 45 minutes. We raced through. They open the roads back up, close the next section. We race that section, move on through the community. We'll see. I think it's four different counties slash we would call them counties here that we actually travel through. One day we'll do 600 miles of driving.
Wow. Well, good. Apparently you're clipping right along there. How fast is that Corvette? What is the top speed on that C5 that you've got?
That one's been 178 in Mexico. The other one we had a 192 in Mexico. And that's two people in the car, race tires, race brakes. I mean, you're fully set up, cage and all. It's when you're doing that on a public road, it is pretty crazy. My fastest is 155. And of course, that was in the V8 Miata, but it's still moving along on a public road. You don't realize how much that road moves until you're doing 150, 190.
I can only imagine. Now, what kind of engine work on the C5 did you do?
This one's just heads cam, nothing crazy. Bottom end is still stock. Improved oiling system, improved cooling system. Other than that, just send it. It'll be fine. GM does a good job. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. GM spent a bunch of money engineering those motors, and even though it's got 70,000 miles on it, it's just fine. Leave it alone.
I think the name of the road is Ay Ay Ay.
Ay 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 Highway, yeah. you know, I heard that the LS1 motor, which I have in mind, does just fine without any kind of a power booster, power adder. But I've always been attracted to putting a blower on it. But then I heard that if you bump it up too much, that it has spring failures in the valve train. I'm going, you know, that'll probably cause a death knell bell to ring on the motor. Did you hear the same thing?
It's absolutely true. What you do is when you actually buy it, there's a full set they will sell you with new valve springs to swap them out. It's not a major thing. You pick up an easy 100, 200 horse, depending on how much you want to crank it up. But I don't think you're out there running around beating on your car like that. So
no,
Toyota might be a better choice for going faster right now.
The Toyota?
Yeah. Might be a better choice for going fast right now.
What Toyota?
The GR.
The GR.
The GR. Do you know about the GR?
The Gazoo.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Toyota's done a lot of stuff on that. Be sure and watch Pike's Peak this year with the Hyundais they're bringing up. Hyundai's got four vehicles they're bringing to Pike's Peak this year.
The Elantra N?
Hyundai's going to have there's an N, and there's a couple electric cars that are coming as well.
Hmm. We don't care about the electric cars. We care more about the gasoline cars. And the more stories that I read, and I've got enough of them this week, that the whole electric thing is sending the entire automotive industry to its knees.
To a tailspin.
Yeah, because companies are laying off workers. They can't sell electric cars. They're selling them, but at a lot slower pace than they first imagined. And they've got problems with them, et cetera, et cetera. I read a story on Fisker, and that's an ugly mess there that'll probably go out of business. So anybody that buys one, I guess you're either lucky or sad, one or the other. Just lost a bunch of money.
Rolling through the auction.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway.
Hertz, I just read an article about Hertz having the same situation, too. Them buying a bunch of electric cars and realizing they weren't what they were promised.
That's right.
So Hertz, was losing a CEO over it.
That's they did. For a while,
They absolutely did.
Richard, it's always great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you.
We'll see you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Richard Tomlin, Apex Auto Works, SCCA. The In-Wheel Time Car Talk show is available 24/7 through the iHeartRadio app. Just look for In-Wheel Time Car Talk. We also video stream on Facebook, YouTube, and InWheelTime.com. And podcasts, they're at your favorite podcast provider.
You bet.
The In-Wheel Time Car Talk show continues right after this quick break. Pro-Am Auto Accessories has been serving Houston's auto enthusiasts since 1984, providing world-class products for sports cars, European sedans, and American muscle. Pro-Am is known as the place to go to find exclusive and hard-to-find parts and accessories. Pro-Am is one of the very first distributors in the USA for brands such as Recaro, Redline, Momo, Corbo and Simpson. Located in the heart of Houston's premier retail and service corridor, the Galleria area, Pro-Am's walk-in storefront includes an 8,000-square-foot warehouse, showroom, and installation bays. Pro-Am not only sells parts and accessories, but also offers installation and service. Pro-Am is now reaching a worldwide audience through Pro-Am.com, taking its local reputation to the rest of the world. At Pro-Am Auto, you'll be dealing with a small group of professionals who truly want to help you with your automotive needs. If you don't see what you're looking for on the website, call and Pro-Am will lend you a hand. Pro-Am Auto, 6125 Richmond at Green Ridge in Houston's Galleria area. Call them at 713-781-7755. Want to feel good about something special you did for someone special? In Real Time and the Original Loopy Tortilla Group of Tex-Mex restaurants have joined together to help a very worthy cause, God's Garage, a Christian-based 501c3 charity. We know there are lots of places and organizations out there where you can donate a car, truck, or SUV, but we're asking you, our car enthusiast family, to consider donating to God's Garage. Visit godsgarage.org and learn about its mission, the women that have been helped, how each one is screened, and about their Restore You program. A car donation is an easy way to make a difference in the lives of others. God's Garage needs good operating vehicles, but will take all types in working and non-working condition. Make your heart and soul feel good by donating your gently used vehicle and help support single mothers, widows, and wives of deployed military at godsgarage.org.
Mecum Auctions, the world's largest collector car auction company, returns to Houston, Texas, April 4th through the 6th at NRG Center, featuring 1,000 muscle cars, Corvettes, trucks, customs, and more. Broadcast on Motor Trend TV and streaming live on Max. From avid collectors to those new to the Mecum experience, we welcome everyone. Register to bid now at Mecum.com.
Okay, very good. Time now on the In Wheel Time Car Talk Show for This Week in Auto History, Mr. Mars.
Yes, sir. The Pontiac Fiero. It was the first two-seater from Pontiac since 1938, but the more important thing was it was the first mass-produced mid-engine sports car built in the United States. It was launched in 1983. It built a total of 370,168 Fieros. 5 years after it launched, on March the 20th, 1988, the last Fiero rolled off the showroom floor.
Oh, boy.
Then, see, March 1999, Ford, we talked about this before, Ford Motor Company created their premier auto group, which was, that was in 1999. It was aimed to extend the European reach. They wanted to get into Europe, so they bought Aston Martin, they bought Jaguar, they bought Lincoln, and eventually they also bought Volvo and Land Rover. But by 2007, Ford figured out they needed to restructure their operations for focus on their core brand, and it did away with that premier automotive group. And then the Mini Paceman, introduced to the U.S. market in March 16, 2013, was released in March of 2013. It garnered a lot of positive reviews. People loved the car. The consumers liked it. They bought it, but executives come to believe that the car was so similar to their top-of-the-line Countryman, because it was made in the same assembly, that it was taking sales away from that vehicle. So they did away with the Paceman just 3 years after it hit the market.
Wow.
It was another one of those automotive things that, oops, we goofed.
Yeah. Well, I think the next one they make should be Moron. The Moron.
I know they've got
we'd love to hear from you. Just shoot us an email. The address is info@inwheeltime.com. Time now for another quick break. You're on the In Wheel Time Car Talk Show, streaming and podcasting around the planet. Look for us on your favorite podcast provider. The original group of Loopy Tortilla Restaurants will have you telling your family and friends just what the original recipes mean when it comes to the best fajitas in Southeast Texas. Founder Stan Holt invites you to visit the original Loopy Tortilla near I-10 and Highway 6. Here's the original house that inspired the design of all the rest and the original charm that helped make Loopy Tortilla the go-to destination for Houston Tex-Mex. Speaking of original, nothing can compete with the original lime pepper marinade that everyone will agree makes Loopy Tortilla award-winning beef fajitas the best anywhere. Loopy Tortilla Katy is another location that gives you the same quality and service Houstonians have come to expect at Loopy's. It's located just off I-10 of the Grand Parkway at Kingsland Boulevard in Katy. Find yourself in Aggieland? Head to the Loopy Tortilla in College Station, located just around the corner from Kyle Field. It's a great place to enjoy those famous frozen margaritas before or after the game. Headed east to Louisiana? Stop in at the Loopy Tortilla in Beaumont. It twos on I-10. You can't miss it. The original group of Loopy Tortilla restaurants invites you in for the best Tex-Mex anywhere. You own a car you love. Well, why not let Gulf Coast Auto Shield protect it? Houstonian John Gray invites you to his state-of-the-art facility to introduce you to his specialist team of auto enthusiasts. We promise you'll be impressed. Whether you're looking to massage your original paint to a like-new appearance, apply a ceramic coating, install a paint protection film, nano-ceramic window tint, or new windshield protection called ExoShield, Gulf Coast Auto Shield is where Houston's car people go. Curbed your wheels? Instead of buying new, why not have them repaired? How about a professionally installed radar detector? Gulf Coast Auto Shield does that too. Get a peek inside the shop and look at the services offered by getting online and heading to gcautoshield.com. Better yet, stop by their facility at 11275 South Sam Houston Tollway, just south of the Southwest Freeway, and get a personal tour. Gulf Coast Auto Shield is your place to go for all things exterior. Call them today, 832-930-5655 or gcautoshield.com. That's it for this podcast episode of the In Wheel Time Car Show. I'm Don Armstrong, inviting you to join us for our live show every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. Central on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and our InWheelTime.com website. Podcasts are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart Podcast, Podcast Addict, TuneIn, Pandora, and Amazon Music. Keep listening, and we'll see you soon.